The idea that complex dynamical systems evolved by acquiring competitive advantages over time was a wild and revolutionary idea back in the 1900s. The theories of English naturalist and geologist Charles Darwin were first introduced and had applications to businesses and free markets in the 1800s, explaining wealth disparities in the Gilded Age for those most inclined to believe in their own successes. But Darwin immediately caused a philosophical revolution with relevance to American religion, American race relations, an attempt to reconcile religion with science. The author of the book that changed America, How Darwin's Theory of Evolution Ignited a Nation, begins his story on New Year's Day, 1860, a little more than a year before the start of the Civil War, when a dinner party begins with luminaries like Henry David Thoreau first encountered a copy of Darwin's new book. What happens next, Randall Fuller says, was a wildfire of word of mouth, and the rest was history.
We tend to think of the 19th century as not being particularly rapid in the flow of information, but Darwin's book arrived in America in the early weeks of December 1859, and by middle of January 1860, there was an American edition, and people all over the East Coast were talking about it.
And that was partly because the first folks that got their hands on this book at a very particular wintry affair had quite a discussion, and that was what rippled out into the world.
That's right. There was a core group of American intellectuals, some of which listeners today would recognize, like Henry David Thoreau, perhaps Bronson Alcott, the father of Louisa May Alcott, but also lesser known people, but no less influential at the time, like the botanist Asa Gray, the child welfare reformer Charles Loring Brace. And all of them read the book, were excited by it for a variety of different reasons, and told their friends about it, and it did ripple out through the country very rapidly.
It was a book that changed people's thinking, and Henry David Thoreau is a great example. How did it change his thinking and put him on a different path?
Henry David Thoreau, we know today as the great transcendental hermit who lived on the one side of Walden Pond in Massachusetts. And as a transcendentalist, he tended to think that God permeated all of nature. But by the time he read Darwin's Origin of the Species, he was becoming more scientific, and Darwin encouraged him to think more scientifically, more empirically. And nature became for him not the residence of God so much as a place of kind of constant new creation, as he calls it, a place of ongoing physical change. One of the things that we tend to forget is just how liberal or capacious religion was in the United States in the 19th century. What Thoreau is able to do is to wed a sense of the divine with the material or the physical, and he really doesn't have great difficulty doing that.
He doesn't see a contradiction.
He does not.
Yet the power of this book is also in the way that it permits people and encourages people to confront issues like slavery, which were at the peak of their brutality and violence in the 1800s.
That's right. I argue in the book that at least initially in the first year of its reception in the United States, Darwin's book was more important for what it had to say about racial ideology and slavery than what it had to say about religion or even the natural world. Particularly, Darwin's book is an attack on what was a dominant trend in science in the 19th century that posited that there were white people created in Europe, black people created separately in Africa, and that those black people were inferior to the white race.
How did that change of perspective play out in various American communities and certain individuals who were very powerful thinkers and politicians at the time?
Well, what it did was give scientific justification for the abolitionist cause. What Darwin's argument was is that all of these races actually derived from this same common ancestor. And in many ways, that's the same argument that theologians argued, right? With Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden are the originary parents of the human race. So Darwin's argument fused these powerful trends in religious and abolitionist thought and really galvanized especially the northeastern part of the United States.
This book had a particular influence on John Brown. What was it?
Well, the influence is in the other way. John Brown was executed for his famous raid on Harper's Ferry, in which he hoped to foment a slave rebellion. That execution occurred just about the same time that Darwin's book arrived on these shores. And so the discussion about slave uprising coupled with a book that could be construed as pro-abolition made for a very potent force.
What would Darwin have said if you had confronted him at the time he was alive with this idea of, what are you talking about? We're monkeys? Which was very much a part of the controversy in the United States in the 20th century.
That's right. Darwin actually had a great sense of humor about that. And later, in the late 1860s, he writes a book called Descent of Man, which is about his evolutionary theory applied to people. But an American friend of his visited and reports that one of Darwin's favorite letters was from an outraged Connecticut minister who had said, I know who your ancestor is, and it has to be an ape.
thinking he was insulting Darwin.
Yes, and Darwin, he had a charming modesty about him, and he took this as kind of an amusing letter that unwittingly confirmed what he was getting at in the first place.
Randall Fuller is the author of The Book That Changed America, How Darwin's Theory of Evolution Ignited a Nation. Randall, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.